everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Tacticam. Tacticam is by far the easiest way to begin filming your hunts. Whether it's the budget-friendly solo or the 4K 5.0, Tacticam has something for everyone. Check them out at tacticam.com.
This year, we're also partnering with Spartan Forge. Spartan Forge is artificial intelligence for the deer woods. So basically, they're taking military-grade technology used to track bad guys and applying that to studies on collared deer, insurance information from accidents, all of that stuff to tell you the best times to be in the woods. We've all got honeydew lists and chores. We've got jobs. We've got all these other things. We're trying to figure out what's the best day to hunt, and Spartan Forge can help you do that along with some of the best imaging out there, arguably the best that I've seen. And their tracking function is tons and tons of little tiny points for the actual track that you took, not skipping points here, there, and everywhere. So some of the things that I like about Spartan Forge are those right there. The imaging is second to none. And you can check them out at spartanforge.ai. And I believe you can still sign up online using code BOWHUNTER to save 25%. And that's just like with Basemap, you got to sign up online. All of these Play Store, Apple, they want to take their cut. So it's hard to get a discount in there. So SpartanForge.ai, check them out. Really good stuff. Go back, listen to the podcast that we did with Bill. You can go on YouTube and see that episode in real time. That may be the easiest way to find it. But yeah, you can check that out. SpartanForge.ai. So we are doing some stuff a little differently. We changed over our host, and so you may be getting two episodes this week. For whatever reason, the last week's episode was only available on half of the things. It's not showing up on my phone for our season update. Last week, we did have an episode last week, but it didn't show up on my phone. It is on the website. It is live. I know that people have listened to it, so I'm not sure where or how it didn't end up on Apple Podcasts, but anyways, some changes are coming down the pike. That's one of them, and hopefully you will get this episode in a timely manner. This episode is one of our Patreons. Eric killed a absolute giant. I don't care if you're in Kansas, Iowa. This is a deer of a lifetime for, you know, almost anybody. But Michigan public land, talking about the size of the deer in Michigan and how, you know, just kind of how this hunt went down. Really awesome buck, great story, and can't wait to share it with you guys. Shout out to some of the other patrons, Daniel, Tim, Tom, all putting down some deer here in the last week or so. We just got back, myself, Frank's son, and my family went up to our camp in the UP over the Thanksgiving weekend and did some rifle hunting with a 6, 8, 9, and 11-year-old. And I completely whiffed, missed twice. Terrible experience for me. But the kids did get to have a great hunt, great camp. It was awesome. We're probably going to be doing a podcast about that coming up pretty soon. Got a podcast about DIY out of state, and then we're going to do that pack review podcast, kind of just breaking down what packs, you know, we're using and some of the ones that we have used and some of the setups that and we're going to do that video so you guys can see that and kind of see how we set them up, all of that sort of stuff. But got to give a quick plug for Patreon. You know, I shouted out these guys. They're guys that support the show, and we want to show them as much love as possible. It helps with these hosting fees, everything that goes along with podcasting, the website, everything. But it allows us to do a lot of this stuff and to try this gear and to, I mean, I've got gear all across the country, people trying it out. to see if they like it, especially for saddle hunting where it's not all that readily available. But we do a bunch of giveaways. We try and give back as much as we can along with our partners. So I do have an Eberle Stock X2 pack that I just picked up. We're going to be also doing a Carter Evolution, I believe, back tension release. And these ideas come from the patrons, basically. You know, what do they not want to spend money on? What are some things that we talk about that they're just not ready to pull the trigger on? Those sorts of things. So those, I did just pick up another Reveal SK trail camera. So we're going to throw that in there as well. And I just set up two of those in the UP, getting pictures from the middle of nowhere. Tacticam Reveal trail cameras, very, very happy with them. We've run some spy points that are so-so, pictures are so-so. Customer service is not great. The Tacticams we've had nothing but good luck with, so we're going to be giving away one of those as well. And, you know, from our friends at Zinger Fletchings, they throw in one of their trial packs. Zinger Fletchings are compression fit fletchings that fly great. Use them at the Total Archery Challenge, shooting over 100 yards, and they flew incredible. They're great. And so they just reached out to us and said, hey, if you need something to give away, we can throw some of those on there. So we're putting those out there. And then a yearly subscription to Spartan Forge as well. Bill does that for us as a courtesy. So all that stuff, you can check that out at patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles Podcast. Or you can check it out just in the link in our Instagram. But if that's not for you, no big deal. Leave us a review. Let us know what we're doing well. Let us know what we can do better. Or tell someone about the show. We really do grow by word of mouth. You know, if there's something that you think someone would like, you know, when your buddies in Iowa, like one of our patrons, Edwin, say there's no big deer in Michigan, point them to this podcast and say, hey, look, this is a public land stud buck killed in Michigan. Just awesome. So let somebody else know about the podcast. I know you guys are going to like this one. Great story. Great guy. Thanks for listening. All right, everybody. Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast today. We're going to switch it up. I know that we've had like a few of our Patreons on here and you know, it kind of ends up, they end up being friends. So it's kind of hard to be one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, this is, you know, Patreon success story. But, I mean, I'd like to think, you know, Eric signed up. We're going to talk with Eric Loso, Michigan hunter from, you're from maybe like the middle east side of the state here in Michigan.
Central, right in central there around Clare area.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, he signed up to be a Patreon and then boom, goes and kills this giant deer. I mean, coincidence? I don't know. But, you know, maybe that's a stretch, but we'll get into that. But how are you doing tonight, Eric?
Great. Sat out tonight, did a good sit out, got caught in some pretty gnarly weather. Had a front move in here and it's snowing, probably 20 mile per hour winds. I was in the tree and got out and run back to the house here and got back just in time to come talk to you.
Yeah, I hunted this morning and I'd been watching the weather all week and it was supposed to be kind of nasty today. And I looked at the weather last night and it was pretty calm. So I went out this morning and it was weird this morning. It was almost like humid. And my thermometer in the car said like 31. And I think when I got done hunting, it was in the mid 40s and it was like warm. It was just weird. And then like 2-3 o'clock, it started, the wind kicked up and it was like 20 mile an hour winds here. Just, I don't know. I expected it to be a nasty day and it just wasn't.
Yeah. The weather had called for it to be rain on and off today. Well, then I wasn't going to go out this afternoon because of the forecast. And then, like you said, by noon, it looked really nice out. It was real nice. It was 40 degrees up here. And so I decided to go out and go try a chunk of public up by me here, that go see what the hunting pressure has been like. And like I said, they're getting close to dark. It switched definitely. and got pretty nasty there. So got a little wet on the way in.
Yeah, sometimes that's good for you. What? So a little bit of backstory. Like, what's your hunting style, or how did you grow up, like hunting?
So, growing up hunting is not really anything extremely eventful. It was, you know, the old style of throw a bait pile out and sit on it, not really pay much attention to wind direction or anything. There was nothing extremely scientific about it. Hunted just around here on state land, some small chunks of private that I had access to. Didn't really do too much, you know, shot a lot of little bucks, does there or whatnot. Then kind of got into, well, I used to work on the road a lot, so I got out of deer hunting for quite a while there. I didn't have the time to do it there, and with kids at home, when I did have time home, I didn't get to hunt a lot. Only time I got to come home was basically when we would get rained out or bad weather. So I got into waterfowl hunting for quite a while, and then switched companies, got back close to home here again, so I got quite a bit more time at home. And then when I met my girlfriend, she likes bow hunting quite a bit, so got back into it. And then, you know, we didn't really have access to a lot of private, so we started scouting on the public quite a bit there. Just, you know, we just love doing everything outdoors there, so got into the spring scouting, winter scouting a lot, putting a lot of time into it. Actually learning how to break everything down, read the sign, and figure out patterns on it. Last couple of years we've been going pretty hard on it there. Again, just trying to break down large chunks. Been doing a lot of water access using kayaks and canoes and boats. Been doing that a lot. That helps kind of get away from the pressure here in Central Michigan. We've got a lot of pressure. There's a lot of guys, and so it's kind of a chore to get away from them, as anybody I'm sure that is a serious hunter that hunts public knows. So we've been doing that a lot. Most of my good spots there, 1 mile, 2 miles back in, and either kayak back in, waders, or a combination of everything.
Okay, so I guess that's kind of a interesting progression. What led you to go like further back? I mean, where was that transition from, you know, nothing spectacular to this like crazy amount of scouting and water access? Like what was the catalyst, would you say?
Well, when I was real heavy into bow hunting before, I don't know what changed, but there was pressure on public land, but it wasn't very hard to get away from people. I really do not like hunting pressured areas. I cannot stand having people walk in on me. Some of the areas I used to hunt, now you go out there and between small game hunters or people walking in, you know, you've got people walking in on you all over. And I just had to get away from everybody. And then between watching some of the newer shows and obviously like the Hunting Publics and everything like that, and watching everybody's been posting all the YouTube videos of the water access with the kayaks and canoes, kind of opened up my eyes there on a whole different world on, trying to find different areas that were not foot accessible. So started, and then obviously, you know, having on there, it made it a lot easier for everybody to be able to look at and scout. So you just sit there looking at your phone and it opens up a whole lot of new areas to check out. So, and again, with the kayaks and canoes and everything, it makes it a lot easier to find that stuff.
And you said you killed a lot of small bucks, you know, in years past. So as you go out, and I know that you're friends with Tim Clark, and he has like a 100-inch rule, basically. That's kind of what he's targeting. What are your expectations like when you step into the woods? Like, what's a deer that you're targeting? Or are you just strictly like an opportunist where you try and put yourself in a good position, but something comes by, you're going to whack it?
You know, I, I used to, you know, basically if it was an 8 point, it was down. But now I've had a couple of pretty decent bucks. You know, last year in Ohio, I shot, I believe it was 142-inch 9 point. And then obviously this year, you know, I've got a couple of pretty decent 8 points here in the last couple of years. So it just kind of, with the new areas that I've been checking out and finding, I've been getting closer to some bigger bucks. So it just kind of raises your expectations a little bit. And it's nice not having the thought of, like, you see a small eight and it's like, that, you know, I got to shoot that. If you get back into these areas, you could let them walk, you know, you can let them go and always try to hope or think that there's something bigger coming around behind. But, and again, that's part of the progression with our scouting here is, you know, we go out right from shed hunting in the springtime. We put cameras up most of the year and, just, it's something that we'd like to do there as a family. We'll take the kids out in the springtime and go shed hunt and go scout and everything, put cameras up and then check them throughout the summer and just kind of see what's going out there. And at, you know, you put a lot of miles on and you start covering a lot of ground and you get yourself on some pretty good deer doing that. So.
Okay. Now, when you talk about cameras, how are you utilizing cameras? Are you using cell cameras? Are you using cameras on places that you want to hunt? Are you using them on travel corridors, on food?
So I've got a couple of cell cameras. I went out, bought some of the cheap spy points there and exactly working out great. You know, you might get a couple pictures here once a week or every other week or something, but I just bought a bunch of cheaper cameras off. Again, being on public land out there, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to get stolen. So mainly, again, with the water access and everything there that I've been doing, mainly we've been hunting a lot of swamp areas. So scouting out there, finding bedding out a little bit higher, bedding out in the middle, islands, and just finding some good runways coming out of there. Or I found a couple of pretty good swampy areas there that have, I found some pretty good white oaks out in the middle of them out there just on little islands. And, you know, I'll throw some cameras out on those, find some good beds on them, and just leave them there for the summertime.
Okay. And then the ones that you're just leaving out there, when are you going back and checking them? And are you moving them after that summertime period?
Yeah. You know, it's leaving them there for the summertime. And again, you know, it's not even really an area that I plan on hunting. You know, I'm not, because a lot of it there, I mean, I know, like watching Dan Infault and them guys will go in there and they'll sneak in through the cattails out there. And I have better luck at sneaking through the cattails and spooking everything out of the swamp out there. So I kind of back off, you know, 100 yards or something out and find where they're coming up into. Like I've got one area there. They're coming out of the swamp off the islands out there and they come up into a little chunk of hardwoods there. So I'll set up on the edge of that swamp, you know, 100 yards from where I know they're bedding, but it's so thick in there that I can't push up in there without kicking everything out. So I'll back off a little bit, hunt off the edges up there. But you know, again, I just kind of use the cameras there, you know, I'll find heavy travel corridors coming out of there, or like you said, like a food parcel out there, like finding a big hardwoods chunk out there that's being used good.
Okay. Now this buck that you killed this year, let's tell me a little bit about the deer that you killed, you know, the one that we're talking about. And the guys who listen to this podcast or whatever, they'll see the pictures of it on social media if they haven't already. But what's the deer that you had shot this year out there in the middle of nowhere?
So it was green scored. It was 171 3/4-inch 13 point, drop tine split G2s. I would like to say that I had some previous experience in history with this deer, but I don't. I didn't have any pictures of it. I had found a new area that I had kind of moved in, hunted for a couple weeks there, and like what was the last 2-3 weeks in October. again, it was canoe access. You know, I used my kayak, but it was 1.25 miles, then almost 3/4 mile walk. You know, it was kind of like a flooded timber grassy area out through there. And it was flooded deep enough there where you could still get through it with like muck boots. You didn't need waders all the way through it, but you didn't have to, you couldn't paddle through it. So I would paddle up in, then ditch my kayak and then walk back in.
So before we get too much into the hunt, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the deer. Because what I wanted to know is, are you, I don't want to, you know, we're not going to blow your spots out and say it was this county, it was this, you know, piece of public land, this state forest, whatever, off of this river, this stream, just park here. what I want to know is, was it in a Antler Point restricted county?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. So I'm sure you follow along all of these pages like I do. Are you seeing more big deer come out of Michigan this year, or maybe in the last couple of years? Man, it just seems like we're starting to see some big bucks, and I think that one is a...
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen some absolute hammers in the last year or two. You know, I mean, like I said, I've lived here my whole life. I'm 41 years old. And, I mean, for most of my hunting career out here, like, if you got a 120-inch buck, that was a monster. Now, just this year alone, I know of at least 4 or 5 different bucks that were around 150 inches killed within 2-3 miles of me. So I'm not sure if it's, you know, them or the antler point restrictions being put on, or I don't know if it's just people wanting to stick with the mainstream media. You know, everybody's got to shoot big bucks. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of stuff online there. People shoot a 6-point there. A lot of them will get shamed for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what it is, but I feel like there is, like you said, there is a lot of big bucks being shot lately.
And I don't know if it's that we're paying more attention to it, like, or we just say, oh yeah, it's a Michigan deer, blah, 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 blah. But in reality, you know, when it goes to, like, you know, myself being one of them, you know, the detractors who aren't happy with, you know, Michigan's conservation or whatever, the way that they are doing their management with the 2 bucks and all of that. But if you look around, I mean, we're surrounded by, you know, Ohio, Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois. So there's no reason that we shouldn't have good bucks. And I think maybe we just sell ourselves short
or
have been.
No, we've been, last couple of years, we've been traveling. We've done Missouri. We've done Ohio last 2 years in a row. And, you know, there's definitely a change there in the caliber of deer going out west or going down south down there. But like I said, you know, I've definitely noticed a swing and a lot better quality deer being harvested up here.
Okay. So you were talking a little bit about that deer and like the area that you'd shot him in. And not, like I said, I just wanted to kind of paint the picture of, like, this is a deer that you would have shot in Ohio or Missouri or
Kansas or Iowa. I mean, it was, it's definitely a once in a lifetime deer for me. I mean, you know, I've never seen anything like that around me on private, let alone on public.
And so how did you, had you hunted this area in the past?
And no, I have not. This is the first year I've hunted this area. And, you know, I've been talking with a lot of different guys. You know, I got into saddle hunting 3-4 years ago. And then I work with Tim Clark, you know, Tim, he's on the field staff for Tethered there. So a lot of times at work, you know, when we don't have much going on, Tim and I will get on Onyx there and we'll just start breaking down parcels and looking at public areas there that have limited access. It's hard to get to, or, you know, just something weird that sets it apart from everything else, you know, that you can't just park at the parking lot and walk in a quarter mile to a good chunk of area. And there's so many areas that we've hunted, you know, Tim and I have hunted even just this year from up north, you know, all the way up towards Grayling or west, all the way down past Saginaw or wherever, that not necessarily huge chunks of land, but have very good opportunities on there, but they have something weird about it. Like I said, you got a kayak or canoe, or you got to wade back in, or it's so thick you can't walk through it hardly, you know, it takes 2-3 hours to get a half a mile back in there because you're just creeping through the edge of the bedding out there.
Okay. Now, so the hunt in which you killed this deer, you said it was, you know, 3/4 of a mile or so to get there, to get to your kayak and or your canoe and then get in there. Was this the first time that you went back in there, or
no,
had you scouted this place before?
Yeah, I had scouted it late summer. Went back in there. I actually went in, hung a camera in there, and then I didn't go back in there until, I believe it was the second week in October. Waited, I had good wind to go back in where I was looking at hunting. And from the time that I scouted it, it was a very dry summer, to the time I went back to hunt it, where I had my camera was on like a convergence of 3 different heavy runways all crossing this little tiny creek. And I figured it was a good place right there just to throw a camera on and try to get some pictures of what's in the area. Well, by the time I come back to hunt it out there, that little tiny creek went into a 30-foot wide rushing river. It was, we had a lot of rain in there. So all the movement had changed. Everything was changed. So I went in there to go get my camera and to hunt it. So I got in, I set up kind of where I had figured. Got in well before it got daylight out. And then when it got light out, all the deer had shifted 120 yards to the southeast. So I saw a couple small bucks, bunch of does, all kind of skirting away from me out there. And at like a little 11 o'clock, I think it was, I got down out of my tree and I kind of, the wind had moved a little bit, kind of shifted to the southwest, I believe it was. So I got down and I just kind of still hunted my way over that way a little bit to see where they were crossing the creek down more. And in the process, I kind of made my way out towards a big clearing. And when I got to the edge of the clearing, I just kind of stopped and was glassing out through the clearing. And to my left, which would have been the north, there was probably close to 130, 135 inch. I couldn't tell if he was an 8 or a 10, but just out in the clearing, working his way out into a big thicket, it's like a big marshy cattails kind of willow marsh out there. He worked his way out through there. And as he was doing that, I was trying to work my way out to a point on the timber out there to try to intersect him. And I got within 60 yards of him. He was out underneath some willows out there thrashing it, made a scrape right out there. And I couldn't get any closer than 60 yards. So I actually got video and pictures of him while he was walking out. And then he just disappeared in the cattails out there. So I kind of shifted over that way a little bit, set up, didn't really see anything else for the rest of the day. Wind was still good the next day, that Sunday. So I come back in, set up the same area. Didn't see that buck come back out, but out in the cattail marsh out there, I saw a big body deer out there, and I could see he had his head down walking, and he kind of picked his head up, and he had big tines on him. So I couldn't let him just walk out. So I jumped down out of my tree out there and just proceeded to kind of still hunt and stalk my way out there to him, and got within 100 yards of that buck out there. And he gets out where he's just getting into the cattails, picks his head up, and it's probably like a 90-inch 6-point. He had no brow tine. So it's like, well, crap, you know, I just followed this thing out here 100 and some yards in the middle of this marsh, and my boots are full of water and everything. And so I kind of went back to my setup back there. And again, the wind's kind of switching around out there. The wind had started coming straight out of the south, and there was a block of timber down in the south that I had been wanting to check out. So I just kind of packed all my stuff up and worked my way down to that timber. I get down towards the edge of the timber, and I would go 20, 30 yards, sit down behind some of that willow brush and just start glassing. In the process, I get down to the edge of that timber, and in there, I bump a doe. She jumps and runs like 40 yards, stops, and then just kind of walks off. Well, she gets back in there a little bit, and she picks up just a huge buck, stands up out of his bed and starts following her. So I backed off out there, watch both of them work off through the timber. Pull up my Onyx, kind of get an idea where they're going. Well, that timber was all flooded. In the middle, you could see it was a little bit higher. And then off to the east, about a half mile, there's a cornfield over there. So I backed out, went way out and around. The wind wasn't great to try to set up on it, so I just backed off and set up, kind of did an observation sit for the rest of the night. Saw probably 110-inch 8-point pushing does around out there. That was about it for that night. The next morning, the wind was totally wrong to hunt that area, so I stayed home. But they were calling for 10, 11 o'clock for the wind to switch from the southwest to the east, northeast, which was perfect for that area. So I just stayed home, kind of took care of the animals and chores and whatnot, made my way over there real slow. And then, because for my house, it's over an hour and a half for me to get over there. So got back in there, and that spot, I have to kayak a mile and a quarter in, and then it was almost 3/4 mile walk through that timber and to get out kind of the area. So I get out, still hump my way through there, and it took, yeah, I think it was almost 2 hours for me to get back in there, because I knew those deer were bedded up through that timber. So I just worked my way real slow, kept an eye on the wind, made sure the wind was good. Got back to where I thought those deer were coming out of the timber towards that corn. There was scrapes and rubs everywhere. Any tree in there that was within 8 foot of the ground had a scrape underneath it. So obviously, you know, the sign is there, and it was all fresh. So I just kind of worked my way out there, probably a half an hour, glass and everything, made sure nothing was in there. Snuck in, got set up just inside of the timber a little bit in the middle of, I think there was 3 good runways coming all out, converging right there. And set up, I think it was 2:30 I got in there. I didn't see a single deer in there until 6:30. Again, that timber was pretty flooded. So it was the deer that I had been seeing in there, you couldn't hear them. They didn't hardly make any noise. They're silent moving through that timber. So I'm up in my tree up there, and I had to get real high up. I was up 32 feet, but yeah, I was up. I was up pretty high. On the way up the tree there, I had dropped some milkweed, and when I was at about 20 foot, I drop it, and the milkweed would go down, hit the ground, it would blow away good, make about 20 yards, and it would swirl right back into the timber. So I went up, maxed out my gear hoist here, so I know I was over 30, and got up. Also, I got up over 30 foot. That milkweed to go out and just stovepipe and go straight up. So I set up in the tree. What was it, like 6:30? I hear something out there in the timber. I turn and look, and that buck standing out there at 40 yards. Made no noise, no nothing. He come up to 18 yards, kind of got to the edge of a little opening out there, and it was real thick. I ended up having to turn and do a strong weak side shot. I had to actually roll all the way to my left side. He come out 18 yards there and gave me a good shot. Got a heart and lung shot, and he ran out 40 yards piled up.
And so then what do you do? I mean, so you're 2 miles from anywhere and now you've shot this big buck. And did you think it was the one that you had seen the other day?
No, actually, the one that I, believe it or not, the one that I had seen was, I think he was bigger than this one.
Okay. So yeah, you shoot this deer that, you know, as you said, is a, you know, somewhat of a once in a lifetime deer. And now you're out here way back. And that's one of the, you know, the conversations that I've had with, you know, guys that I hunt with. It's like, you know, you go into those spots, and especially if you're by yourself, it's like, well, what do you do when you shoot one? Yeah. I was also thinking with that 6 point there that you had stocked up on, I was thinking of that while you were telling that story. Does that enter your mind then, how big it has to be to shoot one, or because you saw that giant in there the other day, is that what you were hunting specifically?
Being that far back, I knew it was going to be a chore getting them out, so I wasn't going to shoot anything smaller. It was going to have to be something pretty big to get worked out of there.
Okay.
But I had planned on quartering them up and getting them out. There's no way I could do that by myself out of there. And then, like I said, you know, being so far back, I had game bags and everything all back at my kayak, everything. I was ready to do it. But when I shot him, you know, like I said, I heard him. He ran less than 40 yards. I think he was like 52 yards is where he piled up and died, but he was back in the brush. So I heard him run off. You know, I kind of sat down there, hung on my saddle for a minute, kind of got collected a little bit, and took a video there of my knockdown there flashing and sent it to my buddy Tim and John there. And he's like, dude, no way. What'd you get? No, that's all I sent him was just drop time. He's like, no way. And the first thing he says, do you need help? It's like, man, you know, I'm an hour and a half, almost 2 hours away from him. And, you know, it's like, I'm not going to ask you to come out here and get into this mess that I got going. But, you know, he loves that stuff. You know, that's we both just get off on it. So I told him, I'm like, dude, if you want to come help, you're more than welcome to go. I would appreciate it. So then in the process, he picked up our other buddy, John, and he grabbed their canoe, and he's got a canoe with a little 3-horse motor, a little gas motor on it. And they buzzed down there. I was out there waiting with the deer. I sat there for over 2 hours, but as soon as I shot that deer and went down and started gutting it, freaking coyotes started lighting up. I wasn't going to run all the way back to the kayak back there, because I sat there and waited for them for, like I said, it was 2 hours, at least 2 hours, till they come back, and we drug that thing back, and then ended up throwing it in their canoe with them, because they had the motor. But it took us, from the time I shot until the time we got back, I think it was 1 a.m. when we got back to the trucks, got them loaded up and headed home. It was pouring rain.
Well, it sounds like a good thing you made a good shot on him then.
Oh yeah. Yep. But it was awesome. Those hunts like that are just awesome. You know, like I said, I've shot some pretty good bucks. That buck I got in Ohio last year was just, you know, nothing spectacular. He come out of the brush and I shot him. You know, it was no good story about it. But this whole story, the whole event thing was just awesome. The way that it all came together, and Tim and John coming out to help, and just getting that share that with my buddies. That was the best part.
So thinking about the the area that you were in and the actual setup itself for those deer, why were those deer back in there?
So, first of all, you know, like I said, it's all flooded back in there and it's thick and it's so hard to get back in there. I don't think there's a lot of pressure on them. And then the other thing, I had been kind of poking around up there when I was up there looking around. None of the oaks had any acorns on them, which was, it was weird. It was odd for me, you know, to get in there and find all these oaks that in there with no acorns. So I don't know if they were bedded back up in there to get away from the pressure or if they were back in there because that was the only standing cornfield anywhere close and they were feeding on it. So I'm not sure exactly why they were all back in there so thick, but I think it was a combination of both those factors. Or
okay. Yeah, I mean, like I say, I always try and frame these from the listener's perspective. So, you know, if we can help somebody kind of put the pieces together, you know, where they're at. Well, hell, even for me, like I want to know, you know, I'm not killing deer like that by any means. I thought it was interesting that you said you went up, you just kept going up, to get out of the, that scent stream. What setup are you using for, are you one sticking, standing, you know, are you using a platform and sticks or?
Yep. No, I'm one stick and I went totally one stick this year. Just for instances like that, you can get as high as you want with it, you know? And then going so far back in, you know, and you start going in 2 miles, it just cuts down on your bulk so much on what you're carrying. So, you know, I've used just a one stick setup there and my Predator platform and then a Phantom saddle there. Going as light as I can.
Okay. One sticking to me is still one of those things where it just seems like so much movement and things. And, you know, I noticed, you know, we got one of those mini climbers from Barron Ridge tree stands. They sent us one to mess with, and I'm going up to the UP here over Thanksgiving, and going to have some time in between hunts up there to kind of fool around with it. And, you know, a lot of the guys are asking from that perspective, like, why would you use that or whatever? And it kind of goes to the one sticking thing where, you know, I think that setup, my brother-in-law and I were talking about it on the mini climber or the lone wolf seat or whatever, is for a guy that is comfortable hunting where he's hunting out of a climber. You know, there's pole trees, you know, he's not trying to push in, you know, right up against bedding or hunt these weird Dan Infault trees or whatever. But he just doesn't want the bulk, right?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like I had a lone wolf hand climber that I had bought, and that's the only problem with them is I like to hunt big clumps of maples or oaks, you know, or like you said, those Dan Infault, the big gnarly, nasty trees, you know, the trunks that are 6-7 foot around and then big splits on them. And so the climber just doesn't work for me. And then with that one stick setup, I kind of modify. I don't do the traditional one stick there from doing 20 years of construction. I got bad knees and they just, between my knees and my lower back, I can't efficiently hang from my tether and move my stick. So I use one of the mini Shikar sticks with a 3-step Amsteel aider. Mm-hmm. And I'll hang that as high as you can flip it. I can hang that, climb to the top of my stick. And I put my Predator platform 90 degrees right at the top of the stick. Climb onto my platform, then just reach down, grab my stick, and then I can move that up, just leapfrog that up. And with putting that platform up there on the top, that enables me, I can almost get 7 foot, maybe plus or minus 7 foot per move And then I'm comfortably on my platform while I'm moving, not hanging from a rope. So in doing that, I can get up the tree very, very quietly, with not a lot of movement, you know, especially, you know, with a, that's the nice thing about the saddle hunting there is you're on the backside of the tree. So if you have a big enough tree and you're not, you know, flipping ropes and buckles and flailing around trying to go up the tree, you can very, very slowly and quietly work your way up the tree. So that's one of the major lessons I like of the one sticking compared to a climber.
Man, we're getting into some, like, we're answering some questions here because, like, you know, that's always one of the things. I know there's a guy, Michigan guy, he was at that Genesis 3D thing, and I met him in Detroit as well. Chris Kuhn. Yeah, but Chris Kuhn, he's killed a bunch of deer, big deer, one sticking, over this year, and I think the end of last year as well. And, you know, so to get you on here and have you have killed that one, out of a one sticking setup, cause everybody, I mean, me included, says, well, it's, you know, there's a lot of movement. There's a lot going on. There's a whole bunch of things. It just doesn't seem reasonable. And so now here we've got an example of someone doing it. Now, have you set up, you said you set up on like a couple of different runways here. Have you set up and had success seeing deer, or maybe just not the deer that you want, close to bedding, like setting up real close on those edges, or are you always setting up a little bit back because of the thickness of the stuff like you mentioned earlier?
No, it just depends on, you know, where I'm hunting at. Like I said, some of the spots, like these ones around that I've been hunting lately there, I can't get close enough to them without making a lot of noise. You know, it's such deep clay muck that it's a struggle to do it. And it's not really the way I want to get in there. So, you know, I've got a couple of spots there where you're within 80 yards setting up. It's thick enough brush that you got enough cover to do that. And, you know, again, depending on the wind there, but, you know, and then some spots you have to back off a little bit.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, because that's the one sticking thing. Oh, there's too much movement. There's, you know, and everybody frames it in the way that they're the only, and I, like I said, I'm going to put myself in this group because I think, like, you know, there's no way. And I don't think it's because I'm setting up that close. I just think that I'm that, like, clumsy or like lanky or whatever. Like, I don't have that attention to detail, I guess.
Oh, it's a lot of practice to do that. It takes, you know, all summer long. I probably three times a week, I'm up in a tree out here in my yard, just, you know, setting up, climbing all the way up, setting up, and then I'll shoot a couple rounds out of it out there, and I'll have my kids run my arrows back and forth out there and so I could take a couple shots, and then I'll tear it all back down, all the way back down, rappel all the way down. So, you know, just getting a system down and, you know, getting smooth at it is the biggest thing. We just got back. We spent 7 days down in Southern Ohio, and the one morning I got out super early out there and went in just with a dim green light. Got in, got up in my tree, got all set up in my tree up there, and it starts getting daylight. I had an entire flock of turkeys all the way around me. So I didn't even spook them out of there. You know, it was, but I knew, you know, the deer that I was hunting down there were on a finger ridge down. You know, I suspected they were within 100 yards of me down there. So I tried to go as early and as, so it's definitely doable. You know, it's just takes practice, being comfortable doing it and knowing how to do it without, you know, without banging your platform or your sticks or anything or making noise.
Awesome. Like, yeah, everybody says, like I was going to say, you know, you can't get as close as I want to get. You can't get the trees that I want to do. What about limbs? What about this? And, you know, it sounds like maybe just like anything else with you know, going, you know, full stop and committing and just ultimately what I hear in there is practice by doing it. That's just the way that you hunt. You don't think about like, oh, if I just had this or I just had that, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of times where I would like to be closer, but again, you know, I know that just like in the areas that I hunt, I know if I try to get closer, I'm just going to blow the deer out. So it's a risk and reward, and it's not worth the risk for me to try to get that close in there. You know, I mean, I'm still close enough in there where it could be a very good chance that I could have a shot at that deer and kill him without kicking him out. You know, I'm not going to do a Joe Rennemaster there and set up at 2 o'clock in the morning and shoot him out of his bed, you know, the next morning, but.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what's the next step for you then? I mean, did you run back in there and put up a bunch of cameras trying to verify that other bigger buck is still in there alive? Are you still hunting him or what's going on?
No, I haven't been back in there. Is not long after that is when we ended up going, we went down to Ohio and I've been kind of hunting around here. So, and then of course rifle season. So I'm not sure what pressure there is going on in there. I would like to try to get back over there in late season, but again, the problem, that's another problem you look into with water access is stuff starts icing up. You start getting even skim ice and it's just loud as hell trying to get back in there. Mm-hmm. So I got a spot by my house out here that I have to go. I'm going to end up going and getting my canoe out of there. And I got a cell cam back in there. It's the overnight lows are looking like they're going to start dipping down under freezing. And once that freezes out in there, I can't get back in there. So it could be right now. It might not be until the middle of December. So,
yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that style. Have you, so from the, I guess it would be private up there with the cornfields. Have you driven around to that side to see if that corn's down? If you can, you know.
Yeah, it's all down now.
So have you looked to see like out in that field or did any spotlighting before gun season to see? I mean, I guess I just think about like everybody, every time, doesn't matter, like you've killed the deer of a lifetime. And the question is always now, what's next? And to know that there's a bigger one in there with, you know, same genetics or whatever, in an area where, you know, you found that they are able to get that big or grow that old. Man, it just seems like I would want to be making sure or pounding out to make sure that deer lived or verifying maybe that he didn't, going to all the buck poles in that area.
Oh, yeah.
You'd hear about it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. No, you would definitely see him. He'd be on Michigan buck pole. He'd be on every page there. I definitely am planning. I want to get back over there just between work and then the Ohio trip there. Like I said, we did a 7-day trip down there and then been hunting around here this weekend. We had my girlfriend's nephew at home over here with us trying to get him on a deer. So it's just been tough to get back over that way. Like I said, it's over an hour and a half to get back over there. And we, between my girlfriend and I, we got 5 kids, so we're pretty busy at home.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, just send me a pin. I'll go put a cell cam in there for you.
All right.
I'll keep you up to date. No, man, that's awesome. And I think the story is almost, I mean, you obviously put in a lot of work with scouting and practice and figuring it out, and everything kind of went right. But I think to go in and, you know, never have seen a deer before, just knowing that there's big ones in there, I think in today's day and age, with all of the cameras and with the naming of deer and, you know, we talk to guys like Jake Bush, right? Who does all of the scouting and has all of this data. You know, Andy May's got all of this data, and there's deer that they've seen year over year. And for myself, I don't have that kind of, I don't know if it's, I guess I don't prioritize killing big deer in that same manner.
Yeah, that's, yeah, that those guys are definitely on a whole nother level from what I've got. You know, I would love to have the time to put into that and everything, but like I said, I just don't have the time to put into it to be able to do that all the time. I mean, I'd put as much scouting is the biggest thing. You know, I put as much time into scouting as I could. But you know, again, with having a pretty large family there, it's, you know, kids' sports and school and then work and all the events for the family there really kind of puts a dampener on it.
Yeah, I think though, like that's the story here is just so great for, you know, the guys like us that really, you know, try to put in as much work as we can, but at the same time, like you just get into an area where you're like, I know that there's going to be big deer in here. And then, you know, when it manifests itself, it's like, man, I am doing it right. And I didn't need to do everything extra and put extra, you know, everything that you had done, be it half of what you wished you could have or not, paid off in a huge way. And I think that's just as reassuring for guys that don't have the amount of time. You know, they're trying to do what they love and balance it between real life, right?
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's, so like I said, I got into saddle hunting 3-4 years ago, and in my mind, that is one of the biggest contributors to it, just being so mobile. You know, like I said, you know, I saw that big buck out in the field out there, and within 5 minutes I'm on the ground and going, you know, I'm going after him. No stand, no sticks to be messing around with. Everything I've got's right on my back, you know. And I mean, that's made a huge difference from how I used to hunt, just, you know, full set of sticks, you know, 5-6 lone wolf sticks and a lone wolf stand and everything, and you just sit in it all night long and, you know, that's your setup. And now I've been trying to do a lot more run and gun. You know, everybody gives me crap. They're like, oh, what happened? Your ADD kicked in or something. You're out of the stand and on the run. It's like, yeah, but you know, I mean, you know, that buck that's out there in the marsh out there, he's headed off. You know, if I can follow him out there 200 yards and watch him bed, you know, and if the wind's right and the area is right, you might be able to make a move on him, you know? And so I've just been trying to do a lot more aggressive hunting. And, you know, a prime example there, you know, of course, everybody's watched the Hunting Public guys, and you watch them, they've evolved so much in the last couple of years, where they went from having full muddy stands and sticks and everything was up in the tree. Now you almost hardly ever see them in a tree. They're on the ground being super mobile, aggressive, and it works. So I'm really digging that. You know, I shot a nice buck out here behind my house a couple of years ago in a standing dry bean field that was tending doe. And one of my best hunts that I've ever done. You know, it was super involved. It was a technical hunt. It was fun, you know, and he wasn't a huge buck. I think he was 110 inches, but just to see the buck and make the move that I did on him and make my way all the way out through there. And, you know, he's in a not even waist high dried bean field. It's like that. Usually you look at it and it's like, that's impossible. There's no way to shoot him. But, you know, I just tried to do it and it's like, holy crap, it worked. So, you know, I got him hanging on the wall now too. And it was kind of an eye opener. That was, what was that, 3 years ago? So it's like, you know, you don't think that it's not doable. You know, it's like anything's doable if you do it right.
Well, it's also not doable. I mean, it is not doable if you don't try, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. So, that's, and again, you know, I mean, I have a pretty limited time on hunting. So, you know, instead of sitting in the tree and watching this deer walk out of my life, you know, a lot of times anymore, if there's a chance, if the wind is right and the setup's right, you know, I might get down and go after them, you know, 6 times out of 10 now. So it's just, I don't have enough time to just watch every deer walk away anymore.
Yeah. And one of the things you said there with the one sicking, and I know John, it's like the bane of his existence too. But I'm starting to really despise the packing up at the bottom of the tree.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, Tim always talks about, and everybody looks at the one sticking of like, oh, it's fun to rappel out of the tree. But the other part of that is you have way less things to pack up.
Yeah.
And you can make that move a lot quicker than you could with, like you said, the 4 or 5 lone wolf sticks or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever is your fancy. And one thing, you know, one of the things too, the difference, I think, you know, when you talk about the hunting public and people hunting from the ground, I was hunting from the ground today. And one of the things that I was in like a big CRP field along this ditch, and I picked the wrong creek crossing and had some deer cross down from me. And it's funny you'd mentioned the turkeys. I had a bunch of turkeys right up above me today as well. But those deer in that tall grass in the CRP when I was hunting, you know, 100 yards away, when I could just watch them, I could look down on them in that CRP. Well, when you're at eye level or when you're in that grass, you know, deer aren't very tall.
So, yeah. You just see the tops of their head and ears half the time.
Yep. And so I got down to kind of figure it would not got down when I was done hunting. I walked along this berm trying to figure out what was going on, and I found the other crossing, and I took 2 steps onto the one side, and two deer stood up about 10 feet from me and took off. And I never saw those deer, and they were less than 100 yards away from me.
Yeah.
All morning. And, you know, and I was like, well, that was pretty wild. and it, you know, just thinking about all of that stuff, because, you know, there's going to be guys that can say, well, you know, you can just hunt off the ground like the hunting public do, but those guys are really good. And they have a lot of, again, just like your one sticking practice of walking around and spotting these deer before the deer see them. That's one of the things that they're really good at. But I mean, I don't know how many years they've been doing it prior. But you also don't know how many times, you know, what doesn't make the video of how many times they get busted or whatever, you know, and they do a pretty good job of, you know, showing when it doesn't go right. But, you know, that's something that we don't take into account is, you know, those guys fail too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So,
yep. But like you said, though, you know, it's never going to happen if you don't try it. You know, sometimes you fail and then one time you'll succeed. So it's, I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah. I got to give another thing, like a shout out to one of our listeners, Chad. He shot a buck last year, and it was the exact same thing as he was on the ground. And he said, you know, this is never going to happen. It's never going to happen for me. And all these series events played out, and now he's, you know, I think he was like 30 yards away from this buck on the ground. And he ended up shooting him, and the deer ran over there and died. And he's like, that never happens to me.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just one of those things. If you don't try, and if you don't try, and even then you don't get a chance to fail and learn, or see, you know, why the deer was there or what you could have done differently. You could have, whether you saw that deer from your house or wherever you first spotted that deer, you could have stayed right there all day long and just watched them.
Yeah.
And the worst case scenario of trying to get down and stalk over there or whatever, is you didn't get them. So you would have not got them just by watching them, or you would not got them by running them off, or like the third outcome is kill them, right? So
that buck in the bean field out here was actually, it was a pretty cool story. I was sitting in a box blind out here at the back end of my property here with my daughter. My daughter wanted to go hunting, and it was not really the greatest conditions to be out there, but she wanted to go. So I took her out there, and we weren't seeing anything. And the neighbors had kind of come up the property line. It was just kind of a shit show, really. Well, I'm looking out through the field out there, and I'm glassing out through the field, and I see a body probably 300-400 yards away out there, just kind of on a little, there's a little bit of a dip down there. I'm glassing, and I just see this rack stick stand up, and he was out there, like I said, 300-400 yards away, tending a doe. We'd watch him. We watched him for probably a half an hour. He'd get up, walk around a little bit, push her around. They both just lay back down. And then, you know, with the beans being so short and then dry, I knew there was no way I was going to do that with my daughter. So I ended up, we left the blind, went back up to my house there, and I dropped her off. And the wind was totally wrong from where I had access up by my house. And the farmer behind me, actually, he'll let me hunt that field. So I went around the block and come back in from the north side. So I had the wind advantage. And the entire time I'm doing this, my girlfriend is still in our house with binoculars, watching me come through the bean field, stalk up on this buck. So she's watching me do that. I come around the field, and, you know, like I said, these beans were just super loud, but luckily it was kind of breezy out. So the wind would blow a little bit, and I'd take a couple steps, and the wind would stop. I'd stop, sit there for 5 minutes. Wind would blow, I'd take a couple more steps. I worked up to the kind of the top. It was just a little bit of a roll. He was on the other side. And I got up to the top where I could just peek up over the top there, and I could see his rack sticking up. And from where I was directly downwind from him, but he was staring right in my direction. So I actually had to back out and come back around to the south more, so he wasn't, the way he was bedded, he was looking right directly in that direction. And I come around the other side, and I got within 60 yards of him, and I was on top of that little roll, and I couldn't go anywhere else. The wind died down. I was just stuck there. So I'm down on my knees, just watching him, just waiting for him to do something. And the neighbors that have the property between the our two chunks out there, they had seen him, and they're in their blind. Well, they start rattling. So I'm down on my knees in this bean field, and I hear them rattling. I'm looking back, and like, what in the hell is going on? And I turn around and look, and he's on his feet and coming at me. So I almost laid right down on my belly, and I had my bow on the ground in front of me. He got up to 40 yards, and I drew my bow laying down in the beans. And when he turned his head, I sat up and shot him. So not only did my girlfriend watch the whole thing happen from the house, but the neighbors were in their blind watching, and they're like, where the hell did this guy just come from? He's out in the middle of these freaking beans. And just, so that was pretty cool. And I've got the whole thing. I've got pictures from the blind. I've got pictures from the middle of the bean field. You can just see his rack sticking up. She's got pictures of me going across the bean field. And then I got pictures of me out in the bean field there after I shot him having a beer. it was a great night.
Heck yeah, that's awesome.
Like I said, though, he's not the biggest buck by far that I've shot, but it was the best story. You know, that was the best hunt. That, you know, I love that hunt. It was great. It was fun.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, forget about rack size or anything like that. It's about making memories, you know? So I'm sure that's despite any other deer that you shoot or that your daughter harvests on her own, she's not going to forget that day when,
yeah,
you know, she wanted to go hunting. I mean, and if I was your daughter, I'd be like, I'm the reason my dad got that buck, because he didn't even want to go hunt.
Yep.
And you know, you'd never live that down. And, yep, you know, it's more about the memories and the the experiences that you have. And that's one of the things with all of this and social media and blah, blah, blah. It detracts from that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been hunting with the kids quite a bit here this year. My son, he just turned 15. He actually got his first deer with a bow this year. And it was a big doe out back out here. My girlfriend's son is 7. He shot his first deer with a rifle in the youth season out here. So we've been hunting with the kids real hard this year. So it's fun. You know, I mean, we haven't got a lot of time in the woods there. We've been hunting with them a lot, but it's fun just being there and experiencing that with them and getting them into it.
Oh yeah. I'm taking my daughter to our deer camp, after Thanksgiving dinner here. And, you know, I took her hunting a couple of years ago. She definitely had, and she wants to pretend hunt all the time, but getting her out there and getting her, I guess, on task at 6 years old, she's, you know, she's good for 45 minutes or so. And then it's yep. like, well, when the snacks run out, and then it's yep, not a joke exactly. that's when all the snacks run out, because there isn't there's no time frame. But we're going up to our deer camp where there's no internet and an outhouse. so we're gonna see how that goes. My wife is
next level.
My wife is convinced that she's gonna be eaten by a bear, but I don't think that's really a concern. But just getting them out there and getting them to experience that is, you know, more important. And we talk about Dan Infault and his hunting and all of that, but you know, he's pretty insightful in some of the stuff that he posts, like about humanity, and you know, if you read his posts about people in the world, he says most of the people that hunt are a different kind of person than people you'd find that are in the city, or you know, have a different set of ethics or morals. There's lots of pieces of shit hunters too, but I would say the majority of them are on a different level than non-hunters, as far as kind of maybe, I guess, the way they were raised. I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
But yeah, we're looking forward to that. That's going to be I'm bringing my bow, but with sitting with my daughter in the blind and all that, we're gonna break out the old 7 mag and see if we can't shoot anything that walks by, just so she can track something and have a cool trip. But it's going to be fun either way.
Oh yeah.
But with the what's your bow setup that you're using for and arrows and all that?
Well, this year I ended up buying a V3, so I got a V3 there, Maxima Reds, and then I'm shooting Spitfires, the NAP Spitfire broadheads. I was going to try to shoot like a single bevel broadhead, but I don't have the time and the patience really to tune my bow for light, you know, so I'm going expandables, but I just got this V3 this year. All this thing's awesome.
Now, how'd you end up on the Spitfires? I got to ask.
So I've shot everything. Oh, I shot Rages for the last 2 years. When that we would stop at Max Prairie Wings and they had them on sale. So I bought 2 packs of Rages and I've shot, I think, 5 deer with them now. And I've just kind of hit or miss, it seems like, on the blood trail. And I never really got the penetration that I wanted to on them that I used to with the Spitfires. Some deer that I would shoot they'd only go 50, 60 yards and you would barely have a drop of blood. And some deer you shoot would go, you know, like my Ohio buck last year, I shot him at 35 yards and he ran 20 yards behind me and piled up and you could see the blood trail from my tree stand the whole way. So I just kind of went back to what worked for me, and you know, I'm not afraid to take a shot at 40 yards at a deer as long as it's not an alert deer and it's a good shot. And these things fly pretty good for me. So I just kind of went back to what I had experience with and that worked good.
Okay. Yeah, that's just, you know, with all of the fixed blade, heavy arrow, and it seems like if you're not shooting that, it's going to be Rage or something, you know, so Knapp, Spitfire, you know, Schwackers, whatever, like the, but yep, that one just didn't, you don't hear too much about. So I was just curious as to how you ended up there. But, man, what a heck of a deer and a great, you know, I think good information for people and motivation, I would say. Like I said, going into an area, just knowing it's going to be good from e-scouting and then kind of putting the pieces together, hunting your way in, taking a couple days to make it happen. I think that's a great, you know, good information, you know, for guys like myself, right? Who, you know, we don't have the time to,
like I said, I've been trying to make myself be more aggressive at times. You know, there's times for it, there's times not. Like, and I've, you know, I have not shot a lot of big bucks, but I've watched a lot of nice bucks walk out of my life, and it's like, man, you know, could I have shot? I have got down and made a move on them. I'll do it. So I've been just trying to do it, and it's worked out pretty good a couple of times now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so you and your girlfriend have a page that you just started up as well, I think this year. So you want to tell everybody where they can check that out if they want to follow along with what you're doing?
Yep, Facebook and Instagram on there. It's called We Who Wander. It kind of just follows some of our little adventures out here. And like I said, you know, everything that we do, right from shed hunting, scouting, you know, fishing, we fish a lot. And we do pretty much everything we do as a family. You know, we got all the kids love to do it. You know, they all got their own kayaks and we all fish together and hunt together and just do all of our little stuff there. So kind of document our adventures on the go.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come out and, you know, talk hunting with me.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Awesome.
Awesome being on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
All righty, sir.